Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Allison Bektesh, sitting in for Carolyn Zachariasen. Days away from Aspen's runoff election, the candidates try to differentiate themselves.
I think they're a lot more alike than they are different, but the biggest difference in them is their style.
8 months after a bear carcass was found at the Pickens County landfill, charges have been filed.
People take this stuff really seriously.
The Mid-Valley is preparing for an art-filled summer.
The very first sculpture unveiling will be next weekend.
And is a government service creating an unfair playing field for local taxi companies?
These are trips where, if it wasn't for the downtowner, I would not likely be calling High Mountain Taxi.
Joining me this week are Aspen Daily News editor Curtis Wackerly and Aspen Times managing editor Rick Carroll, along with Carla Jean Whitley, features editor at the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent, who joins us over Skype. Let's start with Squirm Night was last night. We have two contenders in the Aspen City Council runoff election, Ward Hauenstein and Tori. Curtis, how did that go?
We thought it was pretty smooth last night. It was good to have just the two candidates up there and have a pretty free-flowing exchange of views. I think that's, you know, it's a nice format. And just to be clear, I've heard a lot of confusion about this out there in the community where people don't quite understand what this election is or whom you're voting on exactly. There was the election, as most people think of it, was on May 2nd. There were six city council candidates. There are only two seats available, and you have to clear 45% threshold to be elected. Only one person, Ann Mullins, did that outright on May 2nd. So the next two, the second and third place finishers, were Tory and Ward, respectively. So they are now in a runoff election. And whoever comes out on top when they count the votes on Tuesday, June 6th, will get the second council seat. So that's what's going on here.
Okay. Rick, Tory did have more votes than Ward in the initial election. Do you think that is a sign of things to come in this runoff?
I think it obviously bodes well for him. It puts him in a driver's seat, so to speak. But this is all about voter turnout this Tuesday. And Ward, I think to his advantage, has the older Aspen vote. And the longtime Aspenites have a better voting turnout record than the lesser ones. And so we'll see. I mean, Ward's got a bit of a deficit to overcome. But again, this isn't rocket science. It's how many people are going to show up? Who's going to show up? And is Tory going to, or his voters going to come back again?
Did the two differentiate themselves last night?
I think so. I mean, for two candidates who are aligned in a lot of ways, there were some differences that came out last night. There were a couple questions where you saw that they had some differences on whether or not Aspen should follow Pickens County's lead and adopt an ordinance talking about how we're welcoming to immigrants, or we're not going to participate in federal immigration enforcement. Ward was a little more certain that was a direction he wanted to go, and that the city should not in any way be going, be doing anything about people who may or may not have their immigration status in order. Whereas Tory said, well, you know, we're not going to go out of our way, but if you commit a crime of some kind, then yeah, that definitely opens you up to that.
Were there other ways that the two differentiated themselves?
Well, they certainly tried.
They tried.
I think they're a lot more, but in fairness to them, I think they're a lot more alike than they are different, but there are some nuances there. To me at least, the biggest difference in them is their style. I see Tory being more assertive, more outspoken, whereas Ward is a bit more reserved and measured. But Ward can be forceful on issues as well.
Ward's really cerebral, right? Like you ask him questions, and he goes into a discourse about like political philosophy
Ward doesn't get rattled, and I can appreciate that.
You've both covered Tory when he's been on council, correct? And so, is that the same style that he brings to governing?
Some might say that. There was a question that came up last night about when Tory was back on council in 2012, he proposed this emergency ordinance, and you have to have four votes to get one of these through. He did not have the votes. He said last night he thought he did.
Oh.
Turns out he was mistaken. And because he did not have the votes to pass this emergency ordinance, it sort of sent this big warning. It created an incentive for developers to get their projects in before this land use code change could be passed. That was an interesting sort of rehash of history that came up last night.
And some blame Hecht Roe on that.
Yeah. Well,
I know that's loaded.
Yeah.
Very loaded.
One building on Hecht Roe was part of that. The one that's on the corner that's being built right now is one of those ordinances that came through under the wire that wouldn't have happened if the four votes had come down.
And is that the reason that the moratorium that we just went through was also an emergency ordinance, because they had seen that failed attempt in the past?
Yeah, because if you're going to downzone something, you don't want to give people a window to get their get their projects in before your new law takes effect.
This was a much more organized effort last time around.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, I think they definitely learned. Everyone saw what happened and didn't.
And that's
think
the incident they were referring to.
Rick, did you understand when we were talking about Lyft 1A? Tory had a point where he said he basically thought the Lyft One Lodge approvals should be reconsidered, but he was on the council that approved those.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to sort of square that was he basically said the neighborhood context had changed.
Hmm. Yeah, and they're pretty guarded on what they say about Gorsuch, because one of them will be elected and one of them more than likely will be deciding on this application, and so they can't. They have to be careful about how much they say, because
if they prejudge it, does that mean
it shows they have a bias going into these hearings?
Though in the general election, I did ask Ward about it, and he seemed very much in support of 1A. And what I couldn't square was that, in contrast to being so against the Base 2 Lodge.
Yeah, that is interesting.
But he kind of pulled back last night and didn't say.
Well, they're different animals, though. I mean,
yes, you could argue
Part of the Base 2 issue was, I think it was problematic for a lot of people because they thought that the city council did grant a lot of variances. And it's different with what's going on at the Base.
Instead of variances for the Gorsuch House project, they're just asking to rezone to a zone district that allows for more density.
Just that one little tweak.
So pick your poison.
Well, then my final question on what might come out of the election that is on Tuesday, ends on Tuesday, is we mentioned when Tory was on council before, that kind of did, maybe not in an entirety, create Hecht Roe, but it had an impact.
Mm-hmm.
What's coming up in front of the council in these next 2 to 4 years that, depending on if it was Ward or Tory as part of that makeup, might change the Aspen we see 4 years from now?
I think it's really going to be a different set of issues than we've seen traditionally. I mean, as we just mentioned, there was a moratorium. We've passed a bunch of land use code changes. I mean, the zoning in the downtown core is much more strict than it was during Tory's previous 2 tenures on council. So, I mean, a lot of people are questioning whether there'll be any development applications that come forward under these new codes. Because, I mean, the rules are now you have to conform to these codes. And if you propose something that doesn't meet zoning, and if council goes ahead and approves it, because of referendum one, it has to go to voters. So, there's really very little possibility that any development will be submitted that would go through that process. And a lot of developers have said, well, it's just not worth it if you can only build 28 feet high and 25% open space. Okay, so in lieu of development, I think the big issues are going to be dealing with this new city hall, new building that they're building, the pedestrian mall redevelopment project. I don't know, Rick, what else is out there?
There will be issues.
The dams.
there always are. Uh-huh. Even when we think it slows down, the dams and overall just philosophy towards governing. I mean, I'm curious to see. I don't believe Bert has endorsed anybody.
Well, he had both signs in his yard in the first one, so that is funny that he's staying out of this now.
Right. Adam has endorsed
Ward, which was interesting.
Haven't heard anything from Ann or Steve, and he'll probably stay that way.
Well, normally you don't endorse, right? If you're a sitting council member, it's fairly rare to come out and support when, you're going to have to serve with one of these guys.
Right.
So if you endorse someone else.
Well, and I was looking through the campaign finance records, and Adam's wife did donate the full that she could to Ward. So I think that family is all in for Ward. That seems more like a looking 2 years in the future, who's going to be kind of gunning for the mayoral seat.
Precisely. I mean, okay, let's get our crystal balls out here. We're not supposed to speculate, but let's speculate. I think probably Adam, they're doing this because if Tory gets elected, it puts him in a good position to run for mayor in 19. Mm-hmm. Tory's playing with house money. He doesn't relinquish his council seat because it's 4 years, so he's not risking anything. And
meanwhile, Adam, you know, will be coming off of 8 years on city council, and it'll be an open contest in 2019 because Steve Skadron will have been term limited out. So right, it could be an Adam versus Tory mayoral contest in 2019. I'm sure with like eight other candidates thrown in there.
This is Aspen after all. Listening to Valley Roundup, a look at the week's news with writers and editors in the Valley. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Joining me this week are Aspen Daily News editor Curtis Wackerly, Aspen Times managing editor Rick Carroll, and Carla Jean Whitley, features editor at the Glomet Springs Post-Independent. So let's move down Valley a little bit. Carla Jean, what are you working on? It's a big weekend in Carbondale.
It is. So one of Carbondale's signature projects is Art Around Town, which is a public art installation that changes every year. And so this week, the 15 2017 statues have been unveiled. And part of the celebration coincides with the monthly First Friday event. This week, that's especially exciting because First Friday often highlights different things in the community, and this week it's the Carbondale Creative District, which naturally celebrates a lot of what makes Carbondale so special. And one of the neat things about the Art Around Town program this year in particular is that they've also introduced an app that will allow people to give themselves a self-guided tour. So if you missed the Thursday night art walk, then you can still go to Carbondale, download the app, which is called AutoCast, O-T-O-Cast, and listen to the artists speaking about their work. I think that's extra cool because many of the artists are not from here. There are five from the Roaring Fork Valley in this year's show, but the other 10 are from elsewhere, as far away as Minneapolis, so you don't always get the opportunity to hear that sort of thing. So it's a really neat addition to this event.
The city provided that app?
It is a project of the Carbondale Public Arts Commission, which is supported by the city. And the city has really been incredibly supportive, as I understand it, of this program, not only by years ago passing the legislation that allowed for it to come into existence, but also the town's public works department spends the entire month of May uninstalling the last year's work and then installing the new year's work. So it's really quite a community effort.
Have you seen the new sculptures yet?
I've seen a handful of them. In fact, two of them are on my block, so I see them at least twice a day. And there's a real variety. Some are more abstract, and then some are more figurative. And for example, in front of the Carbondale branch of the public library, there is a Humpty Dumpty sculpture sitting on the fence. And so it's really a point of conversation for people in the area year after year. One of the commission board members told me that she loves seeing how her kids interact with the sculptures every year and how they talk about what the work means to them or how it inspires them, what it makes them think of. So these are really conversation pieces.
And there's more art going on in the Mid-Valley, right?
Oh, absolutely. So the Basalt Public Arts Commission is new, and it's a very similar project that will involve the installation of work throughout the community for a year at a time. The very first sculpture unveiling will be next weekend, June 10th, and it is called Modio 2.0. It's a really interesting work in that this proposal came out of a piece that had been previously installed in Denver as one continuous unit. The artist broke it up into five sculptures and placed them in different parts of Basalt.
Wow.
And it's the sculpture is sort of like a stick figure in movement. And that their hope is that that really represents the connectivity of their community. You know, the geography, the town lines of Basalt are a little interesting, a little, you know, spread out. And so there's some real symbolism in the way that this piece is placed throughout the town and how it is moving in different ways, but it is all sort of representative of the greater whole. And so from 2 to 5 next Saturday, they'll have a big celebration with, you know, riding bikes from one sculpture to the next, performances, face painting, all that sort of thing. So it is a new effort for Basalt, and actually the chair of their public arts commission has a piece in the Carbondale exhibit this year. Oh, so it's also a neat little bit of Valley connectivity.
I know that is very intentional of Basalt to try and establish themselves as a reason to come to Basalt would be like this art mecca. And Carbondale has done a really good job of becoming the cute art space within the Valley. Well, I'm just wondering if like the Mid-Valley is finally catching up by having some of these nonprofit arts, or if they have this ability to surpass.
I mean, this is the seat of the nonprofit industry in the Roaring Fork Valley, and a lot of that is based on arts.
Okay.
We had an artist run for mayor.
Artists can't afford to live here.
Right.
And we had an artist run for council, so.
Right. There's some contradictions there, but.
We don't have a sculpture in our roundabout.
We don't. That is, it's a bone to pick for some people. There's lots of pretty sculptures in people's yards.
Yep.
People like to slash art in Aspen, too.
That's true. God, whatever happened? Would you ever figure out what happened?
Sculptures are harder to slash.
That's true.
He or she is sipping pina coladas.
collecting their insurance check.
Collecting something.
Listening to Valley Roundup, a look at the week's news with writers and editors in the Valley. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Joining me this week are Aspen Daily News editor Curtis Wackerly, Aspen Times managing editor Rick Carroll, and Carla Jean Whitley, features editor at the Glomud Springs Post-Independent. Talk about a crime that is just now coming back after almost 9 months of not hearing anything about it. Rick, your story about the father and son from Indiana came out here and killed a bear in the landfill, which is known for being kind of a place where black bears are digging through. Explain why those charges are just coming out now.
Well, I asked the deputy district attorney, and she said it took them that long to gather the information. Who really knows? Keep in mind, these are just allegations. We're only really hearing one side of it, and oftentimes that's not the whole story. But the side that we did report was that these two men basically left most of the bear there, and when they brought the head down to Parks and Wildlife, they became suspicious of their story, and somewhere there's a gap there. somehow that led them, their suspicions led them to the landfill, and the landfill folks said they found this carcass there buried under the garbage. So maybe they called Parks and Wildlife. I don't know.
Did they have a tag to take the bear?
I don't know.
Okay. They were hunting during hunting season. So is the issue that it was public or private land? Is that what's
that? That was it. I do not know if they had a license or not. There may have been some confusion as to where they could be hunting. Maybe they thought they were allowed to be here and they weren't. Hunting.
Hunting crimes.
Aside from that, I don't really know if it's hunting if you're in the true sense of the sport going to a landfill and shooting a bear. But that's a whole nother issue. Then that's philosophy. I don't know what the law how it works, but regarding that. But one time they were talking about opening up the landfill to hunting because the bears are such a
too
nuisance
many bears,
there.
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
Which is like shooting fish in a barrel.
Right. I think that's why it feels a little more wrong. Though we had the incident up at Sundeck last summer as well. I mean,
that's
I think we have at least one a year where someone just thought that was a fun game, kind of.
Right. Or thought they were justified for whatever reason. I mean, a lot of people who aren't familiar with hunting or the hunting community maybe find it strange to learn that there are felony charges attached to some of these things when you run afoul of wildlife and game regulations. But people take this stuff really seriously. I mean, it's a felony.
The one quote that struck me the most from your story, Rick, was their lawyer, who is local, said that they're longtime hunters. Mm-hmm. And then in the same breath said they didn't know the rules. Mm-hmm. And so it does seem like we're still kind of piecing some
There's a little murky stuff there. So we'll see where it goes. But, yeah, that is a good question. Why did it take them 8 months after the fact to file charges? Well, this is a murder investigation, I guess, but not the way I look at it. But this is a long time passed between the incident and the filing of charges.
And the next thing is that there'll be a court date?
They're due in court, I believe, June 19th.
All right, thank you.
They have not entered a plea.
Okay. Curtis, let's end on your story that you wrote this week about the downtowner. because it's something that I think about all the time, especially when I'm coming into Aspen. There's a sign that's paid for by the city of Aspen that says you can ride for free by downloading the Downtowner app and getting this little cart. It is very much marketed as a free service by the city. The city does pay for it, so you just watch them essentially re-up the contract. They have one more vote on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this has been going on for a year. The city contracted with this Florida company that has these, they're kind of a electric vehicles that seat six passengers, and they cruise around town. It's an app. You hit. It's similar to Uber, where you enter your pickup location, hit a button on the app, and a car comes to get you a couple minutes later. And there's no base fare. It's all paid for by the city. It comes out to around $1,000 a day to contract with this company that has like five of these carts out on the road at all
times.
Like
to rent the carts.
Well, that's basically how much the city pays the company to provide this service, and then they own the carts. But the city gives them, the city gives them the electricity for free. But anyway, it's not exactly free because you have to tip the drivers. I mean, you don't have to, but you're kind of expected to, and that's the drivers aren't paid any other way. They're not making a base salary. Now, it sounds like they're moving away from that, and the city wants to restructure this contract so you don't have to tip and the drivers do get paid, because a lot of people don't realize that. They see the sign, like you say, that says it's free. The app does prompt you to leave a tip.
Okay.
But, not everyone is going to get that. And I've always – tipping just as a general concept is so ambiguous, right?
Well, I wouldn't tip a bus driver. As a tourist in Aspen, I'm also told that the city buses are free.
Right.
And so I get on the bus. It takes me where I'm going to go. I get off. And I don't pay anything. That's actually a free service, but the drivers are being paid. And I think without making it clear, and this is a city service, that we are not paying these drivers in any other way, you don't have the it's not natural to tip the person who's providing a free service.
Right. And so, how this goes forward. And, there's all sorts of questions about this. Is the city creating unfair competition with the taxi companies? The taxi companies certainly think so, because they see this as taking away their business. I happen to think that the fact that it's out there creates kind of a new market.
Okay.
And, you know, I've taken the Downtowner a number of times. It's great because they can take your dog.
I didn't know that.
And these are trips where if it wasn't for the Downtowner, I would not likely be calling High Mountain Taxi.
Okay.
I would be either not taking the trip or I would be driving my car. Or, you know, it certainly is a convenience factor. So it's an interesting part of our transportation picture. And the city basically extended the contract on the condition that they are evaluating all their transportation options and are going to come back with some recommendations and seek new proposals from the community. So there's no guarantee that the Downtowner continues beyond this contract extension through this coming winter.
It is kind of the city undercutting a business, though.
Well, you could say that about WeCycle and bicycle rentals, even though WeCycles are a lot more limited in what you can get at a rental. But the city competes with a few industries in town.
But
when
is
you think
it
about it?
Is it competition when you're giving people more options that they didn't have before?
Right. So the people who spoke at the meeting against the Downtowner would say we're doing the same, and you're suggesting it's a brand new service. I didn't have a ride hail short trip service before.
Right. That's certainly the mayor's perspective. He was very strong in his comments that it's unfair for the taxi companies to get up here and complain that they're being left out when, you know, the city is looking for something that's more universal, lower cost, et cetera, than just your standard taxi service. And this is kind of a new thing. So somewhere in the middle there, hopefully this all gets worked out.
One other thing that ties into that, I stopped by the mobility open house yesterday. Did either one of you go by there with the results from the EOTC study?
No.
How much? Yeah, this is the one where it says how much light rail versus expanded BRT is going to cost.
Yes. And let me tell you, the other thing that when I walked in struck me is that they full on recommend the Meralt, whether we do light rail or BRT. Mm-hmm. And the consultants definitely said BRT and a better bus system is the way to go over light rail. Either way, they want the entrance to Aspen to go through Meralt. That is what they're going to recommend. And I thought that was so far off the table.
Yeah. So here we are again.
I mean, everything's off the table and everything's on the table when it comes to the entrance. But there would be a revolt.
Yeah. You feel like maybe people would be able to accept that a little bit more if they got a train.
Right.
And maybe this is totally irrational, right? That like it's okay for a train but not for a bus, but I feel like that's kind of where people are with that.
Yeah.
And even then it's questionable because you have to pave open space.
Exactly.
And nobody wants to, you know.
Yeah.
That's
the public stopped it the first time and they'll stop it again, you believe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because it's up to, you know, ultimately it's up to city voters and their elected representatives, not people that live in Basalt and Carbondale.
The people who would not need it.
Right, exactly.
Will vote against it. And there lies the rub right there. That's it.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. Well, that EOTC meeting is coming up early this month as well, so we'll keep our eyes on that. Well, then I want to thank you so much for joining me on Valley Roundup.
Thanks, Allison.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of Valley Roundup. Thanks to Aspen Daily News editor Curtis Wackerly, Aspen Times managing editor Rick Carroll, and joining via Skype, Carly Jean Whitley, features editor at the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. I'm Allison Bektesh, sitting in for Carolyn Zachariasen. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.